to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 554. I am Jim McDowell, and with me to talk British Superbikes is Derek Cabrera.
What's up, Jim? What's going on?
Not too much, man. It has turned cold here in the Midwest again. Been snowing today, and all the motorcycles that were out have run for cover in the garage again.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Well, we'll be covering some British Superbikes from Donington Park. And those conditions for last weekend don't sound too different to the conditions that you're having right now.
No, not much. Don't think there was snow during the weekend there, but it's definitely snowing here. Either way, that's what we're going to talk about. But before we do that, hey, it's you guys out there that make the show possible and keep us going. And if you like the show and want to show your appreciation, why don't you head to our page at motopodcast.com. So it's all you guys out there that make this show work for us, and if you feel that you want to, how about a donation to the show to keep it going, keep the bandwidth, keep the web page open? Just go to our web page, motopodcast.com, and click the donate button on the left-hand side. Payments by Patreon, or you can do PayPal. Every little bit helps, and it's really easy to do, and we really do appreciate all of that. So as we go into, we have a little bit of listener feedback this week, and this one comes from Peter Newell. He says, "Hi guys, really enjoyed the BSB season introduction. It's always problematic. Make that routinely difficult to keep up on BSB comings and goings from across the pond in California, so it's much appreciated. Interesting switching of seats going on in BSB Superbike, and from the looks of some teams with riders in their last year of BSB, maybe my boy Lee Jackson will have a good season in 1000 Superstock and be re-elevated by the almighty Stuart Higgs to a Superbike seat next year. However, to the question at hand, I'm interested in a couple of looming technical changes that could be a boon or bust for BSB. The introduction of Moto2 bikes to the British racing scene and Triumph engines in Moto2/MotoGP. With the switch over to Triumph engines next year in Moto2 proper, it would seem that a sub-series with older Moto2 bikes with lightly tuned engines might have a nominal chance for success in Britain. I love supersport racing, but its future seems very cloudy, so I was wondering as to your thoughts on creating an open chassis and engine class for supersport racers. And might it be possible to interview anyone in Triumph's Moto2 engine development program for a status update at some point this year? Thanks, as always, for unfiltered chat and opinions on Motopod. Cheers, Peter Newell." Peter, thanks for writing in. I'll leave the BSB part for the guys that really know BSB really well, or Andrew, Dave Neal, somebody like that should hopefully talk to you to the first part of your question. It's the technical part of your question that I really am interested in, and that has to do with this new, what they're calling GP2 in the British Supersport Series, where they're running sort of the Moto2 bikes that are now out there for sale. As Andy said in the last show, a bike of that nature is costing about 70,000 euro with some spare parts and other bits and pieces. And I think maybe it has some legs. They have made the rules to where you can put any kind of 600 engine that you want in it. That's a neat idea, though. You know, I think most everybody would opt for a Honda CBR 600 because that's what those chassis were made for, whether it be a Kalex or Speed Up or Suitor. But your question about having a open chassis and open engine class for Supersport, there's a two-sided coin there for me. First, as the engineer, the racer, the tuner, the mechanic, I'd love to see it. I think that's one of the coolest things is you have these, successful privateers, if you will, or like club racing amateurs that build these really cool bikes, and they put their heart and soul into it, and they look really good. They spend a lot of time in the garage. They started with this, and they bent tubing and frames, and they tried different things, and they did all this kind of crazy stuff that's there. I mean, when I was club racing, there was a middleweight superbike class, so you could take a 600cc bike, and the only rule was you had to maintain the same chassis that it came from the factory, but other than that, you could do anything you wanted. So engines were bored out, they were stroked, there was cams, all that kind of crazy stuff happening. I saw some guys that actually fabricated their own adjustable swing arm pivot for a 600 Yamaha R1, which I thought was really cool because it looked as factory as it could be. But I think the real problem with that is going to be the cost. You get into this where there's so much cost that's going to be a part of it that I don't think any kind of open chassis, open engine regulations for super sport is ever going to be approved by any sanctioning body, as much as we may like that. It just has to do with the cost. I mean, the days of big sponsors and stuff have gone by the wayside. And there's very few people that have a whole lot of money that are doing it. And that's where I think the big hook is going to be. It's going to be a money issue that is going to keep that from happening. And plus, on the other side of the coin is, for me, it's, this is supposed to be a class that was supposed to be reasonable horsepower, reasonable riding ability, and you're just supposed to learn to race in that class, and you're not supposed to be really, or to the point you learn how to set up your chassis, because basically each stock motor puts out about the same horsepower. So it comes down to how good of a rider you are, or how good you are at setting that bike up, and how you're riding it. And it really lets people who are scouting for other riders and people on a team to be able to look and see the talented rider you are, because they know maybe a Honda CBR600 isn't quite the amount of horsepower that an R6 has, but yet you're hanging in there right with them. So maybe you understand your setup better, you just ride harder, you're a better talent. And if you throw that out to being an open class, I don't think you're going to see any of that. So that's my take on it. Derek, do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think you hit on the two main points. First is cost. It can get really expensive real quick. While development and other factors can really lead into it. Ultimately, it's going to be whoever has the largest budget is going to win. I mean, typically with any series, you see that, but I think that's going to be much more so for an open class like that. And the second thing is, especially within BSB and other domestic series, you're trying to have a stepping stone for younger riders and younger talent to come up through the ranks. And as we've seen, starting at 250 GPs and so on, like you need to make more of a spec class for it to be about the rider and not to be about who has a factory seat or who has the most expensive equipment. So yeah, I think those are the two main things. And yeah, you hit them both, Jim.
All right, well, with that there, I guess we'll talk about the weekend. So BSB started this weekend at Donington Park on what is Easter Monday in Great Britain. So the weather was definitely not cooperative. It had rained very few days before the race. It was very cold. Everybody from the video I saw was bundled up and looked like they were just miserable. There weren't didn't appear to be very many spectators wandering around Donington, which is a shame because I think Donington's one of the better British tracks. I loved it when MotoGP was there. But let's talk a little bit about the qualifying and what went on there. They changed the format for qualifying this year. Gone is the super pole single lap qualifying of last year, being replaced by a 30-minute session. So there's some pluses and minuses to this. I'm not a fan of the 30-minute session. Everybody goes out whenever and kind of sets in some laps. To me, that's just like another practice session. But I'm also not a fan of a single lap super pole because I think that's a very monotonous grind. I much prefer the idea of what MotoGP has come to, where it's split into two 15-minute segments. And so you look at the fastest people from the last practice session go directly to the Q2 in MotoGP, and then everybody else is fighting for a couple of spots to get into that top end, which I think if they did that in BSB, I think that'd be really cool because that might be my preferred way of seeing qualifying.
Yeah, I think we see the majority of racing series now go to that super pole format for a good reason. It's a great show for the fans watching, and it really pushes the riders. And like you said, it's not just an extra practice session, as valuable as that is for a lot of the teams. I think for a smaller domestic series like BSB, that has idea of riders and budgets looking to accomplish different things, it's super. So I guess I get why they're going that form. Yeah, definitely agree. The super pole format in general is, yeah, way better.
I like it. So, So basically, the qualifying was interesting. Basically, Leon Haslam, who has probably more miles around that racetrack than anyone else riding in BSB, basically threw down a 1:29.1. He was definitely that sub magical 1:30 lap that everyone was looking for. He pretty much put that time down early in the session and pretty much stayed there at the top. Things kind of were moving around a little bit with different people kind of taking a run here and there adding, but no one was able to get close. Shane Byrne sprint, who is the defending champion of BSB, he was down the track, down the list for most of the session, and right there at the very end, Shakey kind of put it together and pulled a lap out, and it was a pretty phenomenal lap. I mean, he went to that sub 1:30 time to secure third and was on the front row. They were split by Haslam and Byrne were split by Luke Mossy, and then we had James Ellison, Danny Buchan, O'Halloran, Bradley Ray, the 20-year-old build-based Suzuki rider, Peter Hickman, Dan Lingfoot, wow, and then Glenn Irwin rounded out your top 10. Well, I think what was really interesting in that qualifying session was the number of people that actually fell off at Craner Curves. It seems like everybody, when they made that left-hander as they started down the hill, was just going off, and you could see where the grass, the dirt had all been tore up and destroyed from the number of bikes that had been running through there, and it just was like a crash fest. And I think it had a lot to do with the weather. I think it had a lot to do with how cold it was. People just couldn't keep the heat in that front tire, and that's a first. You know, it's a first left-hander after a succession of rights, and so I think the front tire was just cold, and people were just going down.
Yeah, people are definitely there to push in qualifying, and the curves are one of the fastest sections of racetrack out there. So yeah, both cold weather, cold tires, and people pushing, it was a recipe for disaster. But again, as a spectator, it was a really interesting session because of it.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that kind of caught my eye a little bit is that, you know, you had in like 26 was Connor Cummins, and William Dunlap was in 28th. So here's the guys that you think of as incredible racers because of the Isle of Man, and yet you put them on a short circuit track, and they were, you know, towards the back, which surprising, but you know, I don't know if they were just there for testing, breaking in bikes. I don't know if they were really pushing it, but it was just an interesting thing to see.
Yeah, I always think that's super interesting when you see the TT riders and the roads riders go and do super bike. I think from what I gather, a lot of it's, you know, testing and keeping their skills sharp, but I don't think it's quite as surprising seeing the times, just because I guess that difference between like being on the road, like you can't take the maximum risk and you need to like leave a little in the tank all the time, whereas, you know, guys at the top of BSB, they're taking that risk because they know they have the circuit, they have the run-up area that they need, at least to a degree, way more than the Isle of Man. So I think it's surprising at first, but I think when you really start to think about it, you're like, oh, okay. But yeah, Dean Harrison, Martin Jessup, Connor mm-hmm. Cummins, all kind of towards the back of the field. Yeah, but it's definitely interesting to see their names. You know, ears always perk up when you hear them or see the helmets, and you're like, I know that rider.
mm-hmm. Yeah, it just goes to show you how different it is, roads racing versus running on a circuit. And there's the guys who have crossed over and have been successful at both show you really just how great that those actually are. I know Hutchie was really good at that, and I can't think of the other one that was in my mind, but somebody out there knows, and they'll be yelling at their radio or whatever.
And I think Josh Brooks, who's been doing the TT for the last couple of years, I think he's really the kind of top short circuit racer that's gone to the roads lately. Mm-hmm. And Glenn Irwin last year, I think he was at the Ulster and won there. So definitely some more guys making that step. And obviously we see it much more with the British guys,
mm-hmm.
as definitely. It's, you know, a very British thing, road racing. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, it's really interesting to see those guys make that transition and how just the adaptation process. So yeah, definitely really cool.
Yep. So with that, let's get into race one. So they lined him up, and we got off of the start, and Shane Byrne went backwards. He had an absolute monster wheelie on that Ducati. And surprise of all surprises, Ellison had a really great start. So it was a very close race up front. The other guy who got a really good hole shot out of it was Bradley Ray. So it was sort of Ellison out front. Ray was there with him. Linfoot was right there. And so was Haslam at the very beginning. Everyone was sort of right there together. The race progressed, and you could see real quick that Bradley Ray, he had something for everybody. That bike looked so good coming down through the Craner curves. You could just watch that bike. It was hooked up. He had every bit of confidence in that motorcycle, every bit of confidence you want in a front end. He could just put that bike where he wanted. He could just turn in and turn under people. It was really impressive to watch him. It's his second year in BSB. He's like 20 years old. Really, really impressive riding that he was showing there at the beginning.
Yeah, I think that's the most impressive thing, is just the confidence, like, immediately from the start of the race. Like you said, going down through the Craner curves especially, he just looks so much more confident than everyone. And I don't know if – I think he's, like, a taller, lankier guy. So, like, he's kind of hanging off the bike too. So you really get to see what he's doing and what his body is doing compared to someone like Leon Haslam, who's really small and compact on the bike. But, yeah, he's just, like, super confident, just body language.
At that point, Haslam was in the mix. He looked like he was going to be doing something pretty good there. But what happened is he just sort of got to the midway point, and he just kind of – went backwards. There was really no explanation other than maybe the tires weren't working or something, but he just started slowly going backwards. So it was kind of just Ellison and Bradley Ray that were out front. Linfoot was there with the Hondas, the CBR 1000 Hondas, the Fireblades, looked really good because Linfoot had what was there, and O'Halloran was also there with the Honda. So that little group there between Linfoot, Mossy, Irwin, and O'Halloran was having a real nice ding-dong back and forth in the middle part of the race. So out front, it was basically just Bradley Ray and Ellison. And Ellison seemed to be having it in control, but then Bradley Ray just made a great move. I think he was going into the old hairpin, just kind of set him up coming down Craner Corner, slid underneath Ellison, kind of just gently pushed him out of the way, and then Bradley Ray just kind of took off at that point. He really was just setting some fast laps. He was just checking out, and Ellison kind of went with him for a little bit there. I thought, you know, good on Ellison, because it was a good ride. He was trying to get it there. You know, he was doing the best that he really could with it. But the thing that happened was Bradley Ray just was out front, and he was pretty much unstoppable. So you knew Bradley Ray pretty much had it done. That was where it was going to be. But the surprise at the end was the fact that here come Shaky Byrne. So Shaky started getting there. And while you're thinking Bradley Ray's got this, he kind of, when Byrne caught up, it kind of motivated Ellison a little bit because he had fallen off the pace a little bit. And I think he saw on his board that Shaky was coming. So he kind of got the bit between his teeth and put his head down there a little bit. And it kind of got to be a three-way fight there for like the last two laps. And you didn't really know what was going to happen to it. But you knew Shaky was going to give it a try. And he kind of, they got into the, through the foggy S's, and they came over the hill towards the end of the, towards the Melbourne loop there. And Shaky just gave it everything he had and kind of made a charge at it, but Ellison was able to defend it. So when they got done, they crossed the line. Bradley Ray was a first-time winner in BSB. Shane Byrne took a close second, took it off of Ellison as they came back up out of the Melbourne loop. He out-accelerated him, out-braked him into the final turn there. And then Ellison ran third. Linfoot was fourth. Then Luke Mossy, Irwin O'Halloran, Peter Hickman, Leon Haslam fell all the way back to ninth place, and Michael Laverty wound up finishing in 10th. So that is how the first race ended.
Yeah, it was definitely really, really impressive. You know, those last five, six laps watching Shaky, you know, he's chipping away at everything after that terrible start. It goes to show you can't count him out. The guy's so impressive. You know, 40, whatever. He is king of BSB. And there's no denying that. Really nice to see James Ellison up there as well. And then to see Josh Brooks down in 12th. You know, they switched teams. They were basically, other than that, the grid seems to remain largely the same.
Again, I thought the Hondas looked really good. Linfoot was there in fourth with a Fireblade, and we know that bike sort of had some serious teething problems. So good ride by them. It is, good racing all around. Of note, Bradley Ray did have the fastest lap of the race, so he was going to start on pole for the second BSB race. So
that's one thing that I absolutely love about British Superbike. I think they have the race to starting grid absolutely right. To give the fastest lap of the race to the in pole and then so on. I think that just it makes so much sense.
Yes, it's so much better than World Superbikes. Although I think you can make an argument that this time around with the other rules that are in place, it's really going to shuffle the deck in the second race for World Superbike. But no, I think that BSB, of all the things that they've done, I do not like the showdown method that they use to decide the championship. I do not like that at all. I think if you've been consistent all year long and you've won races and been on the podium, you deserve that championship. I don't think you need to deserve to lose it at the end of the year, especially by a couple thousandths of a second. Like Hopper
I agree,
did.
but I respect how they've configured that, and they've made it their own thing, very unique. No traction control. They have the showdown format. Everything's a little bit different. They're very, you can't get back on the bike if you crash. So there's a lot of things in place which I definitely don't agree with all of them, but I think especially as a fan of, basically every other form of motorcycle racing, and then this is the first time I'm really sitting down and following BSB and figuring out who all the riders are and what all the teams are. I think it's super interesting to see a different format because you have Moto America and it's a very much junior world superbike. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make the same classes and make the same regulations. And I think there's tons of value in that, especially for where the U.S. racing is right now. But I think seeing a huge domestic series like BSB, and then they're just like, you know what? Screw it. We're going to do our own thing. And they've been doing their own thing. It's so interesting because I don't know what's going on, and I have to go through that figuring out how's the qualifying format, how do they start race two. So I think, as much as I don't agree with some stuff, like being able to get back on the bike, it's super entertaining as a spectator, and I think that's what they're going for, and they're doing it really well.
Yeah, I give them props. Higgs is definitely sat down, thought about the rules, thought about what he wanted to do, and he's made a great series. I'm like you. I don't agree with everything that he's done, but there's a lot of things that they got right. And I do think that setting the race to grid by your fastest lap is a great way to do it. It gets you a chance to correct a qualifying problem, or if you're a qualifier that doesn't race very well, or you're a good racer that doesn't qualify very well. I had that backwards. Sorry, guys. So you have a chance to redeem yourself in there. And I know a lot. There's a lot of guys that I know that are Sunday racers, and they really, really can't qualify. So moving on to the second race, everybody was lined up by fast laps from the first race, and when the light goes green, Bradley Ray just gets an incredible hole shot. I mean, he was literally gone because the track, it had rained, I think, earlier in that morning. It was starting to dry. There were some guys on slicks. Some guys were on intermediates. All the fast guys were basically all on a slick front, a soft slick front, and a hard slick rear. Linfoot was an exception. He had an intermediate front but a slick rear. Interesting choice because it was a drying line, but there were rivers across the track. And then you had a couple guys in the back that were on full wets or on intermediates, both front and rear. But anyway, Bradley Ray, he's gone from the hole shot. He was just out there, gone. Haslam was in the mix there. Shane Byrne was in the mix out there at the beginning. And it kind of was one of those things where it just sort of strung out kind of quickly out front. Bradley Ray just kept putting in a fast lap after a fast lap after a fast lap. Linfoot and Haslam were there together running second and third for a good majority of the race. They were kind of, wasn't really going back and forth, but they were spread out. But Linfoot was just pulling out a little bit on Haslam, especially down through Craner Curves and into the old hairpin and then back up to Redgate I don't know, Red Gates at the beginning, but from Craner Curves through the old hairpin and then back out that way, he was definitely holding off Haslam. Haslam was not very fast through that section of it. There was, like I said, there was rivers that were kind of running across the track as they went down through there, but as the track sort of dried out a little bit more, it got to be where there was a lot more dry line, and Haslam started to come on a little bit there in the end. The mid-pack was really looking like it was a really exciting racing between Byrne, Inden, Luke Mossy, O'Halloran. They were all kind of moving around the whole time in there. It was a kind of a, not necessarily ding-dong back and forth, but it was moving around. People were going up a couple spots, down a couple of spots. There was that notable incident with Luke Mossy and O'Halloran, where O'Halloran tried to slide up underneath Mossy while they were going into the foggy S's there. And Luke Mossy kind of took a bit of exception to O'Halloran's move on him. It was a little bit of a...
He was not a happy camper.
No, he was not a happy camper. He was not. It was a hard move because, you know, O'Halloran was definitely taking his line, but O'Halloran was in the clear in my mind because he had a wheel out front, and that was good racing. And you know what, I see where Luke Mossy's mad, but you know what, you got to put your head down and get back at it again, because it was hard and fair at the same time.
He was super fortunate. He had that escape road. He just like immediately went, you know, kept going, and then was right back on the track. But yeah, when I saw that, I was like, oh, he's off, he's, that's it. And he's just like flipped his hand up and kept going. It was pretty impressive for him just get back on. But you know, I see why he was angry. But yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, he had the right to be angry, but he was not in the right.
Nah, I thought Luke Mossy did a great job of just keeping it off the paint, because if Luke Mossy would have you know, been dry, I think Luke would have just gone out onto the curbs, and he would have just kind of either braked harder and let O'Halloran go, and kind of dove underneath of him, kind of the over under kind of thing. But it was wet, so he really couldn't do that. And if he would have tried to stay there and kind of just squeezed on that front brake just that little bit more, he definitely would have probably tucked the front on out of there on the paint. But he held his head, and he did the right thing to not fall and to stay up on the bike. But you know, red mist, right? I mean,
yeah, for sure,
it happens to everybody, and it's the heat of the moment. I'm sure those guys probably went out for beers afterwards, you know. Not a big deal. So as the get back into the action a little bit there, Bradley Ray is pretty much just gone. He's over like 3 seconds ahead of second place, which is now becoming a fight between Linfoot and Haslam, because Haslam has kind of caught up because the track's kind of dried a little bit. Linfoot was on that intermediate front, which was kind of starting to go a little bit, and you're waiting for it, and eventually Haslam did get by. There was a handful of laps or so left in the race, and Haslam started to put in some fast laps, and he kind of was starting to pull things in, pull in Bradley Ray. He was looking for that double, and you're thinking, wow, this could be a real ding-dong here. Haslam's got enough laps, but as soon as they showed the board to Bradley Ray that, you know, Haslam had gotten into second, and he was, you know, eating into Ray's lead, Ray just basically put his head back down and rode off and rode to the finish to win the race. Haslam finished second. Linfoot was third on the Honda. Again, another great ride for a Honda. Love that. I'm a Honda man through and through, so very excited to see that. But the battle for fourth place between Buchan, Byrne, and Inden was a great battle there for like the last five or six laps. Those guys really went at it. Shaky kind of threw everything that he could at Buchman, because he was out front, and Shaky basically kind of did what he did in the first race. He sort of ran him down there at the end. Shaky gave it his best. He kind of actually got Buchan there at the Melbourne Loop. He came inside, outbraked him going in, but he was on the wet line. And you could watch where Shaky's bike, just the front end almost wants to go, and Shaky just lets go of the brakes and slides out, goes out to the wet, and basically Danny comes back up the inside of him and continues on, and then he winds up holding into it. And I think maybe Shaky thought that was like his last great hurrah, his last great chance, because he kind of cruised it in there from the finish. So that's kind of the top four. It's kind of how the races went down. So Bradley Ray wins it. He does the double as a sophomore, first event of the year. Absolutely fantastic ride again by him. Haslam recoups to get second place. Linfoot, Danny Buckman, Shane Byrne, Kristen Inden, Glenn Irwin, Luke Mossy with the red mist comes home in eighth. Jason Holland was ninth, and then there Michael Laverty finishing in 10th. Josh Brooks, who was on a soft rear, actually rode up to 11th, which was a pretty decent ride for him. Anything else you want to talk about there in the race two, Derek?
Not much. In all honesty, it was kind of, you know, not the most exciting race in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, other than that that hard move in some passes by Shaky, it was impressive to see Brad Ray, you know, hit the front and pull Lorenzo. But
mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, they're typically not the most exciting races. But pretty good first foray into BSB for this season and for myself. So I'll definitely be following it a little bit more closely as the rest of the year progresses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was good racing. You know, any racing is good racing. So it was definitely good to see. I thought that it was well done, and everybody rode well, especially Bradley Ray. I mean, he even got the applause on Twitter from John McGinnis, who told him he had done a great job, which, you know, that was impressive nonetheless. So let's touch on the BS or the Super Sport Racing just a little bit. They had the first race on Saturday. So in British Superbike, they give you two warm-up laps, I believe. So everybody kind of takes off, runs around. You get another whole lap at speed to try to get brakes up for temperature. I'm not sure if that was only because it was so cold or if that's an every race thing. I don't follow the series well enough to know that. I'm sure Dave or Andy would be able to inform us of that. But on the one warm-up lap, coming back up to the grid at the end of the second one, there was a big crash right after coming up the hill out of the Melbourne loop. Two guys came together. I think it was an unsighted thing over the loop. Wasn't expecting somebody to be going that slow, and they just bashed right into each other. And they were on the GP two bikes, the old Moto two bikes, and that was amazing. Crash. Luckily, nobody was hurt, but it definitely tore up some motorcycles and necessitated a moment for them to actually have to go out and then re-clean the track. And they gave them one more warm-up lap after that because they just really couldn't let them sit there on the grid while they cleaned it up. So they shortened the race there by one lap. So it was an 8-lap dash for the money, total dash for the cash. Basically, Benjamin Curry and Jack Kennedy were out front on there. They were the stars of the show. They basically ran off and hid and basically settled it amongst themselves. It was a ding-dong battle back and forth, but Jack Kennedy did lead a good percentage of the race. He kind of let Benjamin Curry in front and pretty much watched him a little bit and then kind of took the lead back again, only to have Benjamin get him there at the end and win the race. So in that first short race, it was Benjamin Curry, Jack Kennedy, Ross Tymon, Tom Oliver, James Westmoreland, Tommy Phillip, Danny Allegan, Danny Booth, Robert Kennedy, and in the top 10, Tim Neve. And that's how that one finished on there. So then when we go into the second Super Sport race, which unfortunately I have not seen yet, so we'll just kind of go through it. Again, it was a double for Benjamin Curry. He beat Jack Kennedy again, sort of in the same vein. Tom Oliver this time was in third. Then you had James Rispoli, who had that crash in Craner Curve in the first race. I forgot to mention that. James was looking really good and then wound up doing the tuck in the front there on the Craner Curves on the downhill, and he just launched that bike and flipped it through the air and caught up there in the mud and whatnot. But he came back and ran fourth on the next day, which I thought was really good for him. Then followed by Allingham, Westmoreland, Philp, Twayman, Neve, and Pierre. So that's how the racing events went for the weekend with that. Do you have anything you want to add, Super Sport, there, Derek?
I honestly haven't seen any of the Super Sport races. I do follow James Rispoli on Instagram and Twitter, though. He's a fantastic follow. So if you're not doing that, definitely do it. He's a lot of fun to watch. So I saw the crash, and then I saw his, when he went over the line in fourth place, and he basically celebrated it like a victory. So definitely nice to see the Americans over there. You know, Rispoli's been over there for a couple of years, you know, kind of struggling, but nice to see him up towards the front of the grid.
Hey, what was interesting to me is that all the GP2 bikes were basically sort of at the back. I don't know if they're worth the money that these guys have put into them, or if they're just detuned too much, or you know, if it's like a rider thing, or it's just a learning curve. They just don't know how. There's a whole lot more stuff to play with and set up on the Moto2 bike, the old Moto2 bikes, are than there are on, you know, a true super sport based bike. So it's going to be interesting to see how that develops. We'll have to keep an eye on that as the year progresses and just see, you know, if any of those GP2 bikes can move a little farther up the grid. And we're just going to have to see how that goes.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to watch. I'm actually surprised looking at the results right now, just how far back they were. 22nd and 23rd in the first race, and then 16th, 21st through 25th. Like, yeah, that's tough. And there's not a lot of entries either, which I thought there would be like a full like split grid, but it's really not a whole lot of teams going after it. So you know, if some of the bigger teams like you know, the Gearlink Kawasaki's, the SRG or SGR Racing squads, you know, took it up, I'm sure there'd be a lot more development, a lot quicker. But there's just not a whole lot of benefit for the cost, I think.
Yeah, that's gonna be interesting too. So this weekend coming up, we have MotoGP from Argentina. Should be fascinating to watch the battle between Marc Marquez and Andrea Dovizioso. See where that kind of goes to it. Just your take, Derek. Pick a podium for me.
I'm gonna say Cal's gonna be on the podium.
Ooh,
I'm gonna
nice.
Say Dovizioso is gonna be on the podium.
Okay.
I'm gonna say Maverick's gonna be on the podium.
Wow.
I don't know Marquez. In what order, but that's my no Marquez.
No Marquez. He's
crashed out enough that I think he's not going to crash out again, but I want him to crash out. we'll see. Right. But yeah, that's my podium. I think Cal's super strong. He's been on the podium there for the past few years. I think Davi's in a really strong place, and Maverick's kind of my wild card. You know, he made big steps, and you know, if he did what he does last year, I think he's going to be hard to beat. So, That's my top three. What about you?
No particular order for the podium, but Marquez Dovizioso and Vinales will be on that podium. In what order, I do not know. It's going to come down to tires and who picks best. There's a great read, Motorsports Magazine. Matt Oxley has an article in there about the roulette wheel of tires. Fascinating read. Tall talks about how making the crucial pick for your bike for that track at that time is what's going to be the key to success. I suggest that everyone look that up. Again, Motorsports Magazine, Matt Oxley's article. So that's going to be it for the show. Don't forget, you can reach us at motopod@motopodcast.com. Hopefully everybody will, who writes in, gets a reply back from at least one of the hosts. Maybe if you're what you ask, it excites us, or we think it will lead to a very good conversation. Let's put it that way. You might hear it on the show, as like with Peter's. Again, Peter, thank you very much for writing in with your question. For me, you can find me on Twitter at MotoRGV and also on Instagram at MotoRGV. Derek, where can everybody reach you?
People can find me at MotoDerekC on both Twitter and Instagram. Talk about bikes and dogs. That's all you'll see on those feeds.
All right. So it's all because of you guys out there downloading the show and giving the feedback that we do this for. If you are downloading it and you like it, leave us a good review at iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or wherever you find this podcast. Until we come back next week and talk about MotoGP from Argentina, I'm Jim, and I will talk to you guys later.
I am Derek, and I'll see you guys later.
All right. See you guys.